The Kurds send reinforcements to the front line. We stay behind in Jalula. The town's secure, they say.
Down!
They spot movement. Three or four gunmen.
Guys, come with me!
Down here!
Bullets seem to come in from two or three directions once. Snipers, they say.
Well, when it comes to frontline experiences, not many journalists have been closer to IS or ISIS fighters than BBC reporter Paul Wood. You just heard a snippet of his award-winning 2014 report from the Iraqi town of Jalula. He came under direct fire from IS gunmen when he was embedded with Kurdish troops. Wood's experience in the field means he's uniquely placed to offer insight into the conflict with ISIS, the motivations of its supporters and the wisdom of the West's response to the threat. I sat down with him recently in the US, where he'd been invited to speak to the military's or some of the military's top brass about the nature of the conflict and the organization. I began by asking him to explain what IS actually is and how their influence is spreading.
Last year, I was in a little town called Jalawla, where the Kurds were fighting a force of about 800 ISIS people from a village called Sadia. That was 650 local Sunni Arabs who'd sworn allegiance to ISIS and 150 foreign fighters. Why would you swear allegiance to ISIS if you're a Sunni Arab in eastern Iraq? If you went down the road a little further to a town called Bakuba, in the local police station, 49 Sunnis had been killed. The explanation from the police force was that a mortar had hit the prison. If so, it was a mortar that only killed Sunnis and didn't touch any of the police officers, who just happened to be also members of a Shiite militia. And when the families went to get the bodies, everybody, it was clear, had been shot in the back of the head. So if you're a Sunni tribal leader in a small village in eastern Iraq, what you fear most is the Shiite militias who are just over the horizon. And the person you turn to protect you from that is the ISIS leader who's come with some foreign fighters and a big sack full of cash and is going to help you defend yourself.
So last year, when ISIS made really significant advances in Iraq, there was a lot of questions about why the Iraqi army was so easily removed from those towns and cities. Is that part of the explanation for that?
You have to understand that ISIS is something that sprang out of the soil of Iraq and Syria. It wasn't imposed upon towns and villages which are loyal to ISIS from the outside. A lot of the coverage of Paris dismisses ISIS as mad or bad or a caricature. But if you're in some little village in a part of Iraq near Mosul, ISIS is an option that absolutely makes sense to you. It's something rational. The rapid collapse of Mosul was about something else. It was about the long-term disenfranchisement of Sunnis, people feeling their government didn't represent them, and the fact that the Iraqi army was so disastrously corrupt. More of a business than an army. If you're an Iraqi commander, this is an opportunity to have phantom soldiers on your payroll, to steal the money allocated for food. And I spoke to a Shiite sergeant who literally watched the general commanding his division get in a taxi with other senior officers and just leave. There was no money to be made in defending Mosul. So it wasn't surprising. It wasn't surprising that after that, there was a complete collapse of the front line.
So is that, you described the way we see and understand ISIS, particularly since Paris is kind of evil, is of madmen, it's a caricature. But, you know, the beheadings are true, the brutality is real, is it not?
Oh, it's certainly not a caricature to say that ISIS believes in shocking violence. They point to a passage in the Quran, which they controversially interpret as saying that it is God's will that you terrify the enemies of God, and that's why you have all this propaganda by deed, all the beheadings, and all the very inventive ways of killing people and then posting it on the internet. What I'm saying is something slightly different, which is if you want to beat ISIS, you have to win back disaffected Sunnis who think that ISIS are a logical alternative to the government in Baghdad or to fear of Shiite militias. But certainly nobody's saying that ISIS aren't brutal.
So is it your view that a military response, a forceful bombing campaign, can, if you like, solve the ISIS problem? Or does it actually just help to stimulate it in the other areas in which ISIS can operate?
if you think of beating ISIS as breaking off the foreign fighters who are in a colonial relationship, essentially, with the local Sunni tribes. I knew a man called Abu Walid, who was one of the two FSA commanders in a town called Qusair. At the beginning of the uprising, Abu Walid was what you would call a moderate. I sat with him while calls came in over his radio to say that Christians were being kidnapped in Qusair. He went off to try and calm things down. There's a 25% Christian population in Qusair, and succeeded in doing so. 2 years later, after Qusair had fallen to the regime with help from Hezbollah, after his money had been cut off, after his fighters were literally starving, ISIS came along with a suitcase full of money and said, all you have to do is swear allegiance to us. You keep your military unit, you just take the money. He swore allegiance. They very craftily took his military unit away from him, gave him another one, but people who were loyal to the ISIS leadership. And in January of this year, he was killed assaulting a Christian village in Lebanon. This was a man who'd gone on the journey from protecting Christians to assaulting a Christian village. And he did it because he felt abandoned by everybody else, by the West, by the Gulf countries, and ISIS were the only ones coming forward with support. So that's the colonial relationship. It is coming in and saying to a local sheikh or to an FSA commander, you're still in charge, but now you work for us. You are our local manager in this part of the country. So that's the colonial relationship. And beating ISIS involves breaking off local Sunnis in towns and villages which have sworn allegiance to ISIS from the foreign fighters or from the ISIS leadership in Raqqa or wherever it's going to be headquartered if we keep bombing Raqqa.
You've been a lot closer to ISIS than most people, certainly in the West, would ever care to tread. What have you learnt from what you've seen and experienced being at the front line?
Well, ISIS is a mystery, and it's a mystery because we can't do proper on-the-ground reporting. There have literally been two people who've managed to do that, a rather eccentric German politician and a cameraman for Vice News. Anybody else who went to ISIS territory found themselves kidnapped and often lost their lives. So it's really a process of getting close to people who deal with ISIS or talking to defectors. And I've talked to a number of defectors. It's clearly a movement which lives by the sword and believes in the sword and is probably going by a book called The Management of Savagery, which was written a few years ago for Al-Qaeda in Iraq and talked about breaking society up in order to remake it. It's almost a sort of Rousseauist vision of you cut society into little pieces and then you can put it back together.
Do you think that the representation of ISIS that it makes to people that it tries to recruit and join their ranks is an accurate one? Or do you think that people that are in the West that go off to become jihadists experience what they expected?
No, it's clearly a romantic ideal, but it's a one-way ticket to ISIS territory, and a lot of people who go find that they can't leave. And I've met a smuggler who tries to smuggle people out for large sums of money because it's very, very difficult to get out. And there is allegedly a large house with more than 100 women in who have gone to be jihadi brides and have changed their minds or have married and their husband's been killed, and ISIS is not releasing them. It's quite an interesting phenomenon that a lot of young Western Muslims who go, not all of them, but many of them, are actually not that religious. There were some young Muslims arrested trying to go from Britain to Syria, and they had Islam for Dummies in their backpack, which is one of the reasons why ISIS puts people into religious boot camps when they arrive.
There appears to be, when you look at the imagery, the videos ISIS puts out, there's a kind of gangland style to a lot of it that is intermixed with this very extreme religious rhetoric. Can you explain how those two things coexist?
Yeah, one of my favourite videos is of a young guy speaking in British street slang about his Glock, telling people to give up the squiller, the chase for drugs. This is all British street slang. And this reminds me of a phase in the anti-Soviet jihad when young, rich Gulf Arabs would go for literally a jihad summer holiday in Afghanistan. And they would get enormous credibility, religious credibility, the credibility of a young warrior returning from a battle. They'd go for a summer and they'd come back. Some of the young jihadis that I've met are exactly that. They are street criminals, petty criminals. They go off, have a bit of an adventure, get photographed with a Kalashnikov, and come back, and their credibility, both religious and street, is massively enhanced. There are two categories of people. I call them the gangsters and the true believers. The gangsters are these young criminals who are going for a bit of an adventure. But there are also those for whom the religious message speaks very strongly.
And there's been a congealing, I suppose, of international opinion post-ISIS, if not action. Do you think that the international community is responding in a way that does push against ISIS or actually stimulates what ISIS is attempting to do?
Well, the strategy is bombing, and I suppose it was politically impossible for President Hollande not to bomb. But the bombing seems punitive. It seems to be divorced from any other strategy. And the problem with a force like ISIS is, of course, that it has no big barracks, no big installations. It is dispersed throughout the population. It's very hard to hit the targets you want to hit. That's why the Americans have flown more than 50,000 sorties and had only 7,000 or 8,000 targets they've actually engaged. It's very hard to find targets. And if you think that the battleground for this are the Sunni communities of Iraq and Syria, those are the people you're trying to win over. Those are the people you're trying to detach. Bombing doesn't really help you do that. Now, of course, the question then is, what's the alternative? Is it to send in ground troops? But that is to reoccupy Iraq, reoccupy Syria, something which I think could be done relatively quickly. ISIS only has a few thousand hardcore fighters. They would crumble quickly. But then you're occupying Iraq and Syria again. That was the experience of the last 10 years, and it doesn't lead to a good outcome.
That was Paul Wood, the World Affairs correspondent for the BBC, speaking to me.